भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय We've assembled here to discuss establishing Varnashram communities and Gurukuls. A few days ago in Vrindavan, I spoke about how Shastric principles meant for upliftment in Krishna consciousness can be applied to leadership in Krishna consciousness, particularly with reference to the verses Utsahan Nisya Dharyat from Sri Upadeshamrita and the Atyahara verse. Well, I did them round the other way. I mean, different from the order they come in, Upadeshamrita. So many of these principles which are guidelines which can be applied to advancement in Krishna consciousness can be taken in a different perspective in practical terms. Well, they're meant for practical life, but towards other endeavors, for instance, any endeavor in this material world. If you want to build an atom bomb, you also need utsaha, nischa, dharyat, tat, tat, karma, whatever it is. Whatever, it may be some demoniac enterprise also. They're basic principles which apply in all kinds of endeavors. Establishing Varnashram Dharma, is it material or is it spiritual? Well, it's spiritual. Not in the sense that Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam is directly devotional service, but it is an organization of material society as ordained by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, which is meant to help people to come to Krishna consciousness. So it's somewhere at the interface. If we do it for Krishna, it's spiritual. It can also be done in a mundane way, but then the whole system, if the center, which is worship of Krishna, is forgotten, then the whole thing starts to break down. And therefore we have what Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur referred to as the Asura Varnashram. Real Varnashram is Daiva Varnashram, which means spiritual. Principles which guide our lives in Krishna consciousness can also be considered from a somewhat different perspective in the matter of establishing Varnashram communities. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu analyzed that all the Vedic literatures, they speak of three subjects: Sambandha, Abhidheya, and Prayojan. Sambandha means relationship. Abhidheya means, to understand Abhidheya, we should first come to Prayojan, ultimate perfection, and Abhidheya is the means by which we come from knowledge of our relationship to the perfectional stage. And again, this can be applied in all different kinds of fields, completely mundane also. and we find that there are different followers of the Vedic path, at least those who claim to be followers of the Vedic path, Vedavadarata, those who are attached to the literal words of the Vedas, they also have their understanding of Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayoja. Their understanding is that their relationship with this world is as that of enjoyers. Their ultimate aim is to enjoy this world, and they do so according to the principles enunciated in the Vedas. We don't need all these lights. You do need it for that. Okay. Mayavadis, well, I guess for them, Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojan are all one. But practically, it's not, is it? Because first of all, they have to understand that the aim is to become all one, and then they have to analyze that now I, who am the Supreme, are now covered by illusion as my Leela, and therefore I have to undergo the process given by Shankaracharya to become free, and then I realize that I'm actually the Supreme, but I just don't realize it right now. And all different kinds of paths. So they have their Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojan. So in establishing Varnashram communities, we also have to understand what is our relationship. Our relationship is with the land, the cows, and Krishna, and with each other, and with every living being, as we find in many ancient civilizations, the knowledge of which has been destroyed by barbaric civilizations who want to impose on the world their very narrow-minded view of reality. I'm talking about Christians and Muslims especially have been very expert in destroying all ancient knowledge and rewriting history to fit with their tribal religious outlook and linear concept of time. But ancient peoples, they lived in the world not thinking of themselves as the man is the master of all things, but seeing as themselves as part of the whole ecosystem. Those who killed animals to eat them would only kill what they needed to eat and not more, and they were very careful not to do any more than that. There were, to give a famous example of just the opposite of this, when there was a species of pigeon in North America called the English called it, or who went there called it the passenger pigeon. There were literally millions of them. And they would fly in huge flocks, which would be like big clouds covering the sky. But I think in 1935, the last one died in captivity because the white man who came to America just shot them all. He could shoot one or two for eating if he's such a horrible person that he likes to. I mean, that's bad enough to kill them for eating when the land itself is so obliging in giving all the necessities that we need. But they just, for sport, they killed them. And then there were none left. At least on this planet, in this age. Bison, also a species of cattle, they just wandered the plains. The original inhabitants would occasionally, not all the time, they'd kill one, and they'd have a big religious ritual also, because they knew that it's to take life inherently is not good. As in Vedic culture, before cutting a tree, you have to perform a ritual to, as a precursor to doing that, as a kind of apology for doing so. Only if it's necessary is that done. Only if it's considered necessary. We see that Srila Prabhupada, he had trees, both in Bombay Juhu and in Vrindavan, trees that came within the courtyard of the building of the temples that he was to build. He had them stay. Let them stay. In the tamal tree is there in Vrindavan, which is a particularly sacred tree. And in Juhu, there's a bail tree which doesn't give edible fruits. Just, it's there. It gives fruit, but not edible. Not very, very sour bale. And the other one is the Parijat. Just there. Prabhupada said not to cut them. So, our prayojan is to establish, or the goal is to establish self-sufficient communities, living simply, depending on the land, the cows, and Krishna, in an atmosphere that is conducive for developing Krishna consciousness. Not only in an atmosphere that is unconducive for developing Krishna consciousness, but actually developing it. We don't, it's not just we set it all up and then, okay, now it's good. But actually lots of hearing and chanting about Krishna, which can go on not only at specified times, but those who are, for instance, plowing the fields, they can sing the names of Krishna while doing so. Whole atmosphere that is where everyone naturally just praises Krishna. It should be, in that sense, a replica of the primeval Vrindavan, in which we hear that the gopis, while churning butter, they would sing the praises of Krishna. So where everyone naturally is Krishna conscious and sing about Krishna, and everyone, the group think is one of that we're here to please Krishna the whole way. So we have to understand with, begin with our sambandha, our relationship. When we talk about varnashram, we're talking about the human body and mind living in this world. So how it is to interact with the rest of the ecosystem and how we interact with each other, so that we have to understand. And it shouldn't be a very difficult thing. We're making so much research over what should actually be a very simple thing. If we're born into this culture, it all becomes very simple. But if we're not born into this culture, we're born into the modern way of life in which everything is unnecessarily complex, then we have the great task of getting out all the rubbish ideas in our minds and going back to that simple way of life. Of course, the basic principles, producing food, it's quite simple. Within Varnashram, the complexity comes due to us being human beings, and the complexity of human psychology, of the psychology of people with material desires, then everything becomes very complicated. Everything we see, even in a temple or preaching center, where everyone is cooperating with all have the aim to please Krishna, then everything goes, at least internally, smoothly. There may be difficulties from outside, adibhautik, adibhautik is the main problem in such a case, various demons or various circumstances, they may cause difficulties, but the basic spirit that everyone will cooperate and everyone will be very happy and everything becomes very simple and easy. When everyone has the idea that we're all here to serve Krishna together, everything becomes very simple. But Varnashram, specifically deals with people with material desires. It was introduced at the beginning of Treta Yuga, because in Satya Yuga, there was no real need for it. People were, in general, were so highly spiritually advanced that they just, even they didn't have any, there was, well, you may say, what was the social system before that? There was no social system. It's just, there's no need of any social system, because if there are no criminals and no one has any desires to amass anything, and there's no need of complicated trade or any such thing. People just lived very simple lives, and even farming and all these kinds of things, that came later. Otherwise, you live in the jungle and you take whatever food Krishna provides, and everything's very simple and straightforward. But then as dharma, the sense of dharma decreased, then it became necessary to have formal education, social organization, largely to restrain people from themselves and from exploiting others. So we need and in Kali Yuga it becomes very complex, as much of the work of government and all these social theories, they're just how to stop people exploiting each other, or some of the social theories are to facilitate that. And practically there are all these different social theories like socialism, communism, fascism, democracy, but there, whatever system is there, it's appropriated by intelligent demons who utilize it to exploit others. So we find in the name of democracy, at the present time, it would be more accurate to describe as corporatocracy. That term has come into the English language. Big companies, corporations, they manipulate everything. So our prayojan is to arrange societies with Krishna at the center, in which there's no spirit of envy or exploitation. It is highly possible that such communities can be established and then taken over by persons who do have the motive to exploit others. And it may be very difficult to recognize. We find within our ISKCON society that in the name of Krishna consciousness, it is sometimes seen, let's put it this way, to be a little diplomatic, it is sometimes seen that those who are in the position of leaders or administrating others may be unknown to themselves and undetected by many others, they actually are fulfilling their material desires, dominating, exploiting others, using the facilities for their own personal comfort and those of their families. So it becomes a very difficult task to do so. But it is possible if we understand the members of the who are taking part in such communities, if they understand our sambandha, both our sambandha with Krishna, that we're here to serve Krishna, and what is our relationship with the earth. The earth is our mother. It's only this modern way of thinking that the earth is considered just some chemical, geological entity. Otherwise, the earth is always seen as the mother. The rivers are also seen as the mothers. This modern corporate consciousness, all of us who have had the misfortune to have modern education, we're all, I don't think we even know how deeply we're steeped in this corporate way of thinking in which we see the world. And do we need a translation? Any? Is it going on? More and more devotees coming. I doubt if they can all follow what's being said. Whole way of looking at the world as the world as something to be utilized for human beings, and we see the earth as resources for us to use and to make more and more technological, mechanical devices. And we only care that we're hurting the earth or destroying the ecosystem in as much as we're afraid it might disturb our present or future comfort. But in many cases, they don't care about the present comfort also. As long as it's not me and my family getting polluted and destroyed, then what does it matter? So someone has to go and dig the coal out of the ground, so let these coal miners all get different diseases from doing so. Anyway, they're only coal miners, so what does it matter? And the rest of us, someone has to suffer because of this, so the rest of us will benefit. But actually we're also, and then everything is. And seeing, we tend to deal with human beings. Not seeing them exactly as not. What does it mean to be a human? It doesn't. A human is a cog in a big corporate techno corporate world, in which the main thing everyone has to do is to become qualified to work, and this is called development, and it's very deeply instilled. And sometimes we hear the saying, "Think outside the box." The idea that we're in a box and we can't go outside of it. And I believe that something like that is the... Think different is the motto of Google Corporation. Think different, because you always have to do something different to keep ahead of the competition and to make something wonderful for the benefit of human society, just like Steve Jobs was some hippie sitting in a garage, and he came up with this Apple computer, and then so many innovations. He's a very innovative person. So to keep that spirit alive. So innovation means you think of something which no one ever thought of before. No one ever thought of having what is now an iPhone, iPod, iPad, and all these kind of things. But he thought it was something, because he didn't just think in a stereotype way. And all the great breakthroughs in science are not because of following the standard pattern of hypothesis and research, but thinking in a completely different way. Einstein is the great exemplar of this. Think differently. But actually, everyone's inside the box of thinking that we are meant to enjoy this world. And even the religionists, they're also, and even people who see the whole society, the few people, and they think it's horrible, they're right, and they go and live simply on the land. There are people doing that. But they're also in the box of thinking that we are in this world to enjoy it. But rather we should understand that this world is given to us by Krishna. Modicum of enjoyment is allowed. What is that in the beginning of the third chapter? By these sacrifices, you will be happy. Ishtan bhogan hivo devana sahayagya prajashishva puruvacha prajapati hi Anena prasavishyadvam. Esavo swishta kama dhuk. The kama dhuk, the world is like a wish fulfilling cow. So by performing sacrifices, which is pious, but it's a kind of bribing the demigods thing, and then you can live happily like this. And then later Krishna says, antavattu palante shantad bhavati alpabedis. But one that it's foolish to worship demigods, because whatever you get from them is only limited and temporary. But there's some idea that that's a beginning of piety, to recognize ishtan bhogi bodevan, being satisfied, they'll paraspara, they'll reward you, and then if you don't do all this, then you're just a thief. So that's some beginning. Krishna arranges that the world can be quite nice if we follow his system. Of course, if by our sinful activities in previous lives we're born in some place like Saudi Arabia, don't say that, they might come and cut our heads off. Just full of sand, or an Eskimo, if you say that, you could also be arrested for racialism, being born in. So it's not very nice. But if we're born in some place like Punjab before Nehru's policies of industrialization came, then actually the land is very fertile and very pleasing. Even we didn't really go outside the city this morning, went by the side of a canal with water that looked like blue-green. How is that, algae, or what is that? How can... It's like that right from the source. It looks like a chemical kind of blue, like someone put a lot of washing up liquid in it or something like that. It's like that. But even then, it's just with the trucks going 100 meters away on the road, but still it's some relief to get out of this concrete jungle, as they say. And you can appreciate that, those of you who are living on the land, away from the city, how soothing it is to the mind and the consciousness. I often quote Madhav Prabhu from the, what's that called, New Gokul? Near to Belgaum. Gokuldham. When I visited there once, he said that occasionally we go to Belgaum city and we find it's just horrible. Just all noise and pollution and billboards and everyone rushing around and all this whole atmosphere saturated with calm, crude, lobe. When I go to Belgaum, I think this is a peaceful country town compared to Bombay or something. But the difference between living on the land very peacefully, producing your own food. I mean, even not talking about Krishna consciousness, but even just the atmosphere, such a difference. And it's actually very, even to the eyes and the ears, it's so much more pleasing and soothing to be in such an atmosphere. Do you feel that when you go from this Panchavati to Salem? You can feel that when you've been, especially when you've been there for some days and weeks and months, what a difference. I've often told this anecdote, I'll tell it again, that this was maybe, I don't know, more than 15 years ago. I'd been traveling around, going by train, town to town, been quite a hectic schedule, rushing here and there, preaching in different places. And then I came to an ashram in Kulur near to, well, it's in Dakshin Karnataka district. And just at the, actually not really in the town, just outside, and there's a stream flowing past it. Then when I lay down to rest, hearing that stream going past and knowing that tomorrow I didn't have any hectic program, I could just get up and chant my rounds, and there's no one, I think there was one devotee there. And I just felt like cloud of tension just lifting away from me. The sound of the stream and being in the country, and then the crickets chirping, not very loudly. They can also, that's also, they can chirp very loudly also. So it's like being next to some factory or something, the sound. Also in Bangladesh in the rainy season, you used to have that experience. The frogs would have such a big concert. It's difficult to sleep. So many, thousands of them all around. You don't see them, you hear them. So, this the consciousness that comes with this corporate consciousness, be a success, get ahead. Even when we try to apply, I can't exactly put my finger on it, what it is, but even when we think, well, we should apply it to the Krishna consciousness movement, well, maybe it's a big institution in a institutionalized world, so maybe we need to have corporate principles, but I don't know, I just feel very uncomfortable with all of this. Just like, it's like dehumanizing, just say, writing on a piece of paper, everyone, or now on the computer screen, and just seeing how to mobilize everyone, and it's not dealing with people as units who are to be mobilized and moved around and put in slots to make the efficiency of the whole institution go on better. And then you deal with devotees who are completely steeped in this. They're corporate managers, and you see they want to deal you quickly. Okay, let's do this. And they have these smart ideas which they come up with, I exactly what it is, I can't say, but I feel very uncomfortable with this whole way of dealing with others, just seeing, it's just, the emphasis is on efficiency, which is okay. In farming also, it's good to be efficient. We see Punjabis are efficient farmers, they're good, Gujaratis are good farmers. Andhra people are good farmers. Oriyas, forget it. Bengalis, somewhere in between. That's all right. But this is wanting to squeeze every drop of efficiency out, and then people should work just up to the limit that they don't drop dead. And if they do, well, we'll bring someone else. But we don't want them to drop dead because we want them to go on working. So the corporations, they arrange for you to have swimming pools and gymnasiums, and they encourage you to, and they have free health checkups. Not that they give a damn for you, but they've invested so much in you so that you can operate for the benefit of the corporation that they want to protect their investment. That's how they see it. So the whole way of thinking is just insidious. We have to get, if we can get out of that, then we can begin to be human beings, because after all, Varnashram is meant for human beings, and for the animals, and for the land, and for everything. But the whole corporate consciousness is very, very polluting, and just as, this the whole psychology that comes with it, how we see the world, how we deal with people. Very smart, too smart. So our relationship is with the land, the cows, and Krishna. We depend on the land, the cows, and Krishna. And not on our own smart intelligence and our new schemes. But talking about thinking outside the box, that's what Prabhupada did. He's the only one, he took us outside the box of materialism. And no, even other Vaishnava preachers, they didn't really get this point. Prastas matu bhavanyo vyakto vyaktat sanatana yasa sarveshu bhuteshu nashyatsu navinashyati. We're not meant for this world, we're meant for the spiritual world. We're not meant to be sense gratificatory beings. It's very difficult to One reason it's very difficult to establish these communities is that people in general don't understand it. They think, well, it's all right to be religious, but what's all this? Leaving the world, leaving your responsibility to uphold the society and help the country to develop. So we should understand that our relationship is with Krishna and with Srila Prabhupada, who wanted us to establish these communities. The land is our mother, which means that we, by her kindness, we can take from her, but we're not meant to just bleed her. We should love our mother also, and all living beings. So this whole idea that we're not here for sense gratification, it's very, very difficult for even our own devotees to take it up. And it's easier to preach Krishna consciousness if we don't stress this very much. And that we really don't have anything to do with this modern society. It's demoniac, it's leading us in the wrong way. We need to do something different. Okay, everyone can't go to the land, understood. But understand at least that if we, by various circumstances or our own conditioning, we're not able to go to the land. Of course, one reason not to go to the land is to preach. That's also. And that's often used as an excuse for those who could, but they say, no, I have to stay in the city and preach. I'm talking about grihasthas especially. Yeah. But this whole idea, people are so much concerned that I have to maintain my prestige and I have to have a good house and a good car. And everyone can see I'm up to standard. And I can't wear a dhoti because people will think there's something wrong with me. And there's so much concerned about what these mudhas think. And then we also become a mudha. we don't really escape from that. We're still in the wrong consciousness of, yeah, all right, we chant Hare Krishna, but let's take it step by step. Well, okay, step by step, but there are certain steps that if we don't take, we're not really going to go anywhere. We have to take a very serious step out of this whole demoniac way of thinking. If we can't, for whatever reason, physically transport ourselves outside this demoniac society, then at least mentally we have to do so. Now, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, of course, famously upheld the teaching, sthane sthita shrutigata, stay in your position, and chant Hare Krishna. But that doesn't mean that psychologically we should stay the same. Just stay the same. Okay, so, all right, I'm smoking 40 cigarettes a day. I'll stay the same. That's a gross example. That's a gross example of something that has to be changed. But even if we stay in our position, some things have to change. Smoking cigarettes, that would have to change. But even our whole way of thinking, because if we do, hear, that's the whole point, is to stay in your position. Stanesta shutika, go on hearing. We have to hear that this material, this sense gratification acts oppositely to our self-interest. So we have to, this whole society is gone. How big is your TV? You walk into someone's, I have a big TV. Oh, then they're very prestigious because they can spend so much money. I have to have a big TV also. One thing when I mention, it seems, I don't exactly understand why, but it seems to deeply hurt the hearts of our lady devotees, is when I point out that this nail polish is just complete nonsense. If you're a devotee, you're spending money which you could spend for Krishna, and mostly this nail polish is full of chemicals, yes, and animal products. And why? Anukulyasya sankalpa pratikulyasya vajram. Everything we do should be conducive for our Krishna consciousness, and we should reject anything that's non-conducive. So where does nail polish fit in there? I'm sure someone could invent some kind of philosophy. Oh yeah, okay, all right. Well, if I have it on, then people will think it looks nice, and then it'll be better for preaching. There you go. There's a philosophy. But not a very good philosophy. So that's just an example. I mean, it requires a whole different approach to life. Of course, in the beginning, when people come, we don't say, okay, you're not allowed within 5 kilometers of the temple unless you have no nail polish and you have to shave your head and keep a shika. All right. People can come. But people can come at any level and any standard, but they have to make the transition from, if they're actually going to take to Krishna consciousness, then it means war against Maya. They have to make the transition. So sthane stita, these farm communities are to help people to make the transition to Krishna consciousness better. When Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was preaching, practically anyone could live in their position. It was, despite the Muslim rule over much of India, to a large extent, people could follow the Vedic principles and stay in their position and chant Hare Krishna. But modern way of life being industrial-based, what does Srila Prabhupada say? Saps the very vitality of the human being. This modern way of life. The vitality not only physically, but mentally and spiritually, they have no idea whatsoever. So, our relationship is not with this modern demoniac society, nor even with this modern India. Of course, spiritually, we don't have any relationship with any land. From the spiritual point of view, there's unquestionably, within this miserable material world, India is the most important place for self-realization. But the modern India, which is based on factories and industrial development and just a completely Western approach to life. Women should also be out working. Why should they be wasting their time looking after their children? And better they only have one or two. We don't want too many children. We only want as many as are required to make this society go on nicely according to our demoniac plans. So the whole outlook is, we don't belong to this Mera Bharat Maha, not that India. We want to, that's another point of these communities here in India, is to re-establish that God-conscious culture, which people say, oh no, what's the use? It's a stupid thing, it's out of date. So we should very clearly understand why we are doing what we are doing, and be able to preach that to others and demonstrate it to others, abhidaya, then what is the means? We understand what we want. Why we should understand what we're trying to do, why we're doing it, what we understand what we're aiming for. Self-sufficient, simple living, high-thinking communities. Why that should be. Why that should be is not only for the sake of living in varnashram and living depending on the land, the cows, and Krishna, but also it's why, as a protest to and a solution to, demonstrable solution to, the modern demoniac society. So that's another aspect. It's actually preaching. to show people that there's a better way of life that you can live when you don't have to live like a demon. If we're living in corporate life, we may be chanting Hare Krishna, but our lifestyle is dictated to us by the demons. And if we're working in a corporation, then we have to live and act like a demon. And which means we have to think like them too. That's what I'm saying. It's very pernicious to bring this corporate mentality. Even we don't know we're bringing it, we're just so deeply steeped in it, to bring this corporate mentality into Krishna consciousness. And to get it out of us is very, very difficult. This slick, efficient way of thinking and dealing. So Sambandha, Prayojan, then Abhide. How do we get from where we are now to where we're at? And we'll have to see how to do that. Overnight, it's not going to happen. As we're having these meetings here to discuss the various points that we come up with, there are various issues that we have to deal with. One of them is our own consciousness and the consciousness of those. To even bring devotees to these communities, we have to preach to them about the necessity of doing so. Many of the devotees who are interested in this, one of their main reasons is that they want to save their children from the demoniac education system. So we have to preach that to others. We can't have varnashram unless, even if those who are not going to be willing to join us, if they can understand the point. Otherwise, if our own devotees don't understand the point, then they'll think we're wrong, because you have to have some way of thinking. Unless we understand the purpose of these varnashram communities, then we're going to be stuck in the way of thinking that, well, to get a job and a career and work hard and make your way in the world, be a success, that's what we should be doing. And if devotees don't do that, that's wrong, because people will criticize us. And if we do that and we're all very successful and then people appreciate it, and then also become devotees. That's one way of thinking. And those who think like that, this wrong way of thinking, then they're against this Varnashram initiative. Because they think that real preaching is to live in the cities and be greatly successful, and successful in terms of the demons. And then you can increase the number of devotees. You increase the number of misguided devotees. It's actually much easier to bring people to Krishna consciousness if you make this compromise and say that, yes, it's right, your career is your devotional service. So encourage them in their materialistic propensities. And it seems to be very successful to have hundreds and thousands of people whose main attention, or in the way they live their life, the main focus is working and having a career and making money. And in actual terms of the time they put into it, the vast majority goes into working, and work means they have to, corporate, efficient, get ahead. Unless you're in that consciousness, you can't be there. You get left aside. Well, if one is actually becoming Krishna conscious, then he finds that hellish. And actually, it is hellish. So that may seem to be one kind of success, but the practical effect is that we have all these devotees who, they've never had any training in even very basic activities of Krishna consciousness. Just like you were several years after you were initiated, due to family circumstances, you were working in some software company and Bangalore or whatever. So what a difference after you join in the training and everything that you got. And the whole understanding, they think, yeah, I understood, because I went for a three-week Bhakti Shastri course, cram it all in, I got my Bhakti Shastri certificate. Yeah, I understand the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. But the Bhakti Shastri course is supposed to be an adjunct to Nityang Bhagavata Sevaya, not an alternative to it. The thing that Prabhupada stressed most was to hear regularly. And he also said we should have Bhakti Shastri, but he stressed more regular attendance in daily in classes. But you don't do that if you're busy working to make money. And then you think that this cramming in some Bhakti Shastri and getting your mark. And often they do very well, these people, because these devotees, because they're used to all this mental, but I don't know how many, what they actually understand will be seen in their life, because if they actually have transcendental vidya, then vairagya should be there also. Vairagya vidya. But if there's no vairagya, it means they didn't understand. If there's, even after getting their Bhakti Shastri course, if they're still interested in getting a big car and having a big house and living comfortably, it means they didn't understand anything. It's just theoretical. So sambandha abhideya, finding the means, the dealing with the mentality of the devotees, the abhideya, how to enact it, considering the various laws of the country, which are not set up for becoming Krishna conscious, nor for simple living and high thinking. The government policies regarding agriculture are for mass production for the sake of feeding a largely urbanized population. And that's another point about sambandha. We get to understand that food, milk, comes from a cow, not from a packet. There's in one of Dr. Sahadev Das's books, there's an anecdote related. Tesco, you're all going to know the word Tesco. It's going to become a household word, as it was in England when I was growing up. You've all heard of Walmart, probably. So Tesco is the one of the English equivalents. Tesco, Spa, these two. They have shops. There's a chain stores where you get cheap food and other things. When I was a kid, it was only food. I think Tesco sells pretty much everything except elephants. They might, if you tell them, if there becomes a market for elephants, they might start selling them too. Whatever sells, whatever makes money. So there's an anecdote of this, true anecdote. Anecdote means it's true. Of a woman in England who had an allotment. That means people who live in houses where there's not much space for growing anything, or no space for growing anything, they can rent from the local municipal corporation a little land for growing whatever they want to grow. Mostly people grow vegetables. So one time this woman who was growing vegetables on her allotment, she went there bringing with her five-year-old daughter and the five-year-old daughter's school friend. So she went there and she pulled up the carrots and very proudly showed the nice carrots, naturally with all the mud sticking on it. And the friend of the daughter said, "Oh, look at all that mud. My mother doesn't take carrots from the earth. She gets them all nice and clean from Tesco." So they think, they don't have any idea that carrots actually come from the earth, and when you pull them up, there's earth sticking to it. No, because in Tesco they're all clean, and they're all grown in a modified by various technical modifications. They're all grown to be the same size and perfectly shaped. And if it happens that your biological manipulation doesn't work in the case of one carrot and it happens to be bent, then it gets thrown out. All the carrots have to be straight, so that otherwise people don't like them. Taste the same, have the same nutritional value, which in most of the biological manipulated foods is not only minus, but not only zero, but minus. Not only does it not nourish you, but it poisons you. Anyway, you get some carbohydrates, and you can take. In England, you have to take a whole bunch of pills when you, along with your food, because you only get some carbohydrates and proteins, or the vitamins and minerals you have to take from supplements, because you can eat the food, you completely fill your belly, but you'll still be malnourished because the food doesn't have doesn't have flavor or sufficient nourishment. You can see these beautiful looking roses in the West. They're, what is it called? Hypo something. What's the word? Hygronomically grown. It means they're grown in water. Hydrophenic, is it? And they put some chemicals in the water and they come up looking beautiful. And the smell is beautiful rose. A rose would smell as sweet by any other name. There's a slight smell of some biological matter, like leaves or something. Something like cabbage, but only 10% or something like that. No sweet smell of any rose. So, also understanding our summer, that food, clothing, shelter, they come from the land by the grace of Krishna. People who live in cities don't understand this. And probably the farmers less and less understand it because they think it comes from chemical manipulation of the soil and advanced planting patterns and so on. So, education, a lot of work. First we have to get all the sakala vihaya, everything you know, just throw it out. Chaitanya chandra charane kurutanuraga. That's the spiritual side. Everything you know, forget it and surrender completely at the lotus feet of Chaitanya Chandra. So the varnashram equivalent is just throw out all that stuff that we think we know and understand what is our relationship with the land, the cows, and Krishna. Yeah, and Abhide, how do we get from here to there with various obstacles that we have to overcome because the influence of the demoniac society is everywhere, in everything. In our own minds also. Hare Krishna. I'll finish there for now. I'll maybe take one or two questions because we have to get on with the meetings also. But many things I plan to speak more things also. So continuing this theme. Yeah. Yeah, if we don't have proper Vaishnava attire, then we go to the spiritual world in our jeans and t-shirt and Jai Vijay will say, hey, wrong dress code. There's a dress code here. You're not allowed in like that. Of course, that's a humorous way of speaking. But you'll see in many churches and synagogues, and I'm sure in mosques, if anyone tried to come in with some t-shirt with heavy metal written on it or something, or jeans, they'd probably get, I don't know, some mosques, they'd send you back. The Swamis, or one of the branches of the Swami Narayan Sampradaya, they were the first to institute a dress, I believe it was that BAPS, Pramukh Swami branch, they instituted a dress code that women can't go in the temple. They have to, unless they're wearing saris and this and that. And they have saris that they can put on. They might have to be shown how to put them on. They don't know. A few years ago in Bahrain, some devotees told me some girl who had come there from Raybareli in UP, she became a devotee there, and then she was then at her marriage, she had to have she didn't know how to put a sari on, and there was surprise coming from a relatively small provincial town in UP, but she didn't know how to put even a sari. Of course, in Punjab, it's become traditional to wear salwar kameez, but just by the very name you can understand it's not Vedic. So, shatika is the Sanskrit word from which we have the word sari. So yeah, dress codes, appearance, vishbhushan, we should look like a Vaishnav. Think like a Vaishnava, but you didn't finish your question.
Nowadays it is being preached that you can just chant 16 rounds and follow four regulative principles. Immaterial where you are, you can be IT professional.
Yeah, you can. Yeah, it's being preached that you can just chant 16 rounds and follow four regulative principles. Okay, but then why didn't Srila Prabhupada just say that? Why did he preach day and night about various other aspects, and why did he preach about Vedic culture, and why did he appreciate that his disciples were wearing Vaishnav dress? You can do, if you're so advanced, you can be Krishna conscious in any time, place, and circumstance. But then why did Srila Prabhupada make Varnashram communities? To make a situation favorable for devotees, because we're not pure devotees. But if you're really so advanced, then why do you want to be an IT professional? Just preach Krishna consciousness. If you're so advanced that you're not affected by anything all around you, you can do anything and be Krishna conscious, and then if you're so highly advanced, then why not preach Krishna consciousness full time? You're already so detached from any material influence. Why would you want to be in that situation with all this demoniac atmosphere? Even this thing about wearing t-shirts with some kami motto on them. Why would a devotee, why would someone who's in Krishna consciousness want to wear such a thing? Doesn't fit together, does it? T-shirt, yeah. Sure. If you want to wear a t-shirt, well, it's not the worst thing in the world, but you could wear a plain one. Why some kami motive?
Prayojana point of view, like in Goloka Vrindavan, it's a culture of cow.
Right, right. These are all other points to be discussed. Yeah, we have to prepare ourselves. If you go to Golok Vrindavan and say, "Hey, where's the laptop? Where are the cows?" There are the cows. Cows. I want to get on the internet. You can have a virtual cow on the internet. No, I have to. Of course, we do use all these things. I'm also using a computer, writing books, saying that all these things are nonsense. That's the. Srila Prabhupada was challenged about that. Why are you using airplanes if you say this whole society is useless? And Srila Prabhupada gave the example of using an axe to cut a tree. To use an axe to cut a tree, you need to, if you just have the axe head, You can't do it. You need a handle, which is traditionally made from wood. So use the wood to cut the wood. So in the same way, we're using these things that you have made to point out how useless it all is. We don't actually need it. And all these things gradually make people more stupid. Okay, who can, in their mind, multiply 79 by 33? Anyone? Vedic mathematics, give the answer. Okay, let me try. Oh, how horrible, I'm back at school again. What's the easiest way to do this? Let's try multiplying 80 by 33 and then subtracting 33. Okay, so I have 2,607, is that right? Get it, do it in the computer. A couple of generations ago, anyone who'd been trained in basic arithmetic could just go voomp like that. But now we can't do it because, well, anyway, I haven't been doing it for years because you don't need to. Well, what is it?
2.326072.
Yeah, I got it right. Ah! I think that's what I said. Yeah, 2637. Okay. But all these things make us more dull. In modern anthropology, they mark the beginning of civilization with writing. But in Vedic anthropology, we mark that as the end of civilization. Because what previously people would remember, they had to, instead it's written down. It makes people more dull. And then we think, now we have the information age, everything at the touch of a button, you can look it up. But people, they have less comprehension. Mass education brings the whole level of intellectuality down. If a few people are educated, they can be educated well. People are actually fit for academic education. If everyone's educated, then you have then cartoons. In Japan, you see the most popular thing that people read are cartoon books. Highly educated people. Cartoon, that's the most popular kind of books they have. Then they can promote all kinds of useless sports and fashions and just make people fools. Education means they think they're making people intelligent, but it's used to manipulate them and make them more foolish. Anyway, that's a whole nother topic. What was your point?
To attain our ultimate prayer, should we pass through this culture or directly we will just by chanting?
Well, that's... Should we establish another culture? At least, even if we don't understand why, we need to understand why. We should understand that Prabhupada wanted to do this, so we should do it. To preach against Varnashram is Guru Aparad. Within ISKCON, to do that is Guru Aparad. Serious. To preach against it and to ignore it and not do it without even preaching against it. That's also Guru Aparan, because it's a serious order that he gave us to do it. Anyway, I'm going to stop now. Hare Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.